All right, Crazy Horse Tavern, Big Show Friday, Happy Hour Edition. It is the 9th day of February. Getting ready for Super Bowl weekend, and we're getting ready for Indiana and Purdue. The men go tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on Fox. The women are here on Sunday, 2 o'clock on the Big Ten Plus. And basketball is always very near and dear with Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, who checks in here as we get ready for, well, round two with the old enemy, if you will, up Interstate 65. How are you on this glorious Friday?
I'm good. How about you?
You are making the trip up to West Lafayette, I would take it.
I am indeed.
Well, what's more? What's the old saying? There's nothing more fun than a barrel of monkeys. That's exactly right. So Indiana on their way up. And yesterday, Mike Woodson met with the media on Thursday. We talked yesterday a little bit about the things he was talking about. And the, well, issues Purdue are going to provide for the Hoosiers. Indiana last time at the Simon Scott Assembly Hall. Pretty good opening 10 minutes, and then the fouls started piling up. Some of them bad fouls, some of them questionable fouls. And Indiana dug themselves a huge first half hole, tried to get back in the second half, but ultimately lost by 20-odd that night. Was it 87-66? I have it here in front of me. Well, first of all, let's get to the injury situation, shall we? Malik Renew, banged up a little bit, as we've seen over the last couple of games. You would think he has to be ready to go tomorrow, right?
I mean, I would think so. You know, I don't think he came out at all in that second half at Ohio State. Obviously, you know, I don't know if it was not his career high, but it was something obviously approaching a career high and one of his best career performances, is, you know, particularly given the circumstances, what Indiana needed from him and how much he steadied that team. You know, 38 minutes, 26 points, 15 free throw attempts, 14 rebounds, a couple of assists. You'd be awfully surprised if he's not ready for this game.
Played right through it. Saw a little bit of a struggle on Saturday against Penn State, but there was no residuals on Tuesday. Khalil Ware, on the other hand, blew a tire there in the final 3 or 4 seconds. That just looked terrible, and I don't know what, if anything, came out of it. Woodson told us he was going to, well, take a look at practice and evaluate him yesterday. Is that a different set of circumstances?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I'm with you. You know, I mean, you see that. I think anybody who's played sports has kind of had that really awkward sort of lockout hyperextension happen. And sometime or another, it's really uncomfortable. It's scary. It, you know, it can be as mild as just some discomfort that, you know, is gone by the next morning. It can be as serious as, you know, ligament damage or things like that. I mean, I think that if Ware were, you know, suffering a really serious injury, forgive me, I think we would know. I don't think Woodson would be talking about seeing him at practice, you know, if Ware were in a position where, you know, they knew he was going to be out a month or something like that. You know, it's obviously hard to know. You know, there's, I think, some uninformed chatter, at least kind of reaching my end, that he may have been participating through Thursday's practice, but I don't really want to stick too much on that from a journalistic integrity perspective. Having said that, you know, there's a couple things I say about injuries at this time of year. Number one, you know, you're not doing a lot of physical activity in practice this time of year anyway. You know, this is the time of year when your practices are already going to be shortened, are already going to be truncated. As you said, guys are already hurt, you know, the wear and tear of the season. You just don't need to work as much. And number two, you know, if you're Khalil Ware, I mean, I think there's value in this game for you. You know, Zach Edey is the biggest test you're going to get, and you struggled with him the last time you faced him, 5.6 rebounds, that early foul trouble. You know, it's a game where I think Khalil Ware could both be pivotal for his team and also potentially improve his own sort of standing and draft stock and things like that. And so I think it's a game that he'd want to play in if possible. And it's a big, you know, it's a big one because Indiana doesn't really have a natural way to kind of isolate Edey within Purdue's offense if it doesn't have Khalil Ware on the floor. And I think that's what you need if you're IU.
And the magic question is going to be Xavier Johnson, doubtful for when, doubtful for everything. He's out indefinitely. If you saw the pictures last night on social media, He joined Anthony Leal and Trey Galloway at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. You could see his elbow in a brace of some kind. So if you're doing that off the court, there's not going to be much on the court. I know we hate to speculate, but Coach Woodson said, and the program said, out indefinitely. So that's not a good thing. Trey Galloway met the media just a little bit ago this afternoon, and he echoed kind of the same sentiments. It stinks, and we just kind of got to use them how we can at practice, being a vocal leader, but that's about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't – that one does not seem like it's any, you know, it's particularly close to a resolution. And I think when you I saw the picture with the brace too. I mean, like you said, if you're wearing that out and about in public, you know, that means there's probably some significant structural damage of some kind there that is requiring you to keep the arm completely immobilized. And that's, you know, that's a tricky bit. that's a tricky thing to kind of navigate. And especially if, you know, we talked about this, but it, you know, it's Woodson described it as an elbow injury. When you see the elbow immobilized like that, you do wonder if you're talking about ligaments or tendons or anything like that. And you know, the elbow is up there with the ankle in terms of being, you know, among the most sort of anatomically stupid joints in the human body in terms of its construction and its structure. So those can be tricky if you wind up getting an injury there. And of course, the way Johnson went down looked really awkward. He was obviously in a lot of pain. So it doesn't seem like that one is going to be coming back anytime terribly soon for Indiana. Terribly soon, at least, meaning Purdue. And then, of course, you've got the week off, and maybe that's a week to assess what the long-term prognosis looks like.
No games of state there if you're wearing the old elbow brace out there in public. So that's part of that as well. The road trip heads to Mackey Arena, 8 o'clock on Fox. Saturday night, Gus Johnson and Jimmy Jackson will have the call for all of you tuned into the television medium. Indiana went up there last year, had one of the all-time performances, regardless of age, regardless of anything. Jalen Hood-Schifino had, what, 35 that night in Mackey as Indiana completed the season sweep. Well, those days are behind us. Game one this year, 87-66, Purdue wins at the Simon Scott Assembly Hall. Indiana gave up 51 first-half points. What did Indiana learn from that first game, whether it's how to attack, how to slow down? I'm not sure. The second half, they did slow down Purdue. That was the big talk after the game. But 87 points in total. Everybody learns something from it. And number one, Indiana cannot get in foul trouble. They got to play good defense without fouling. We know that. But Purdue here, over the seven-game win streak that they are, they're scoring for fun. They score 85 every night or more. Well, they're number two in the country for a reason. They're awfully good, and they're awfully balanced.
And they're playing, I mean, it feels like they are approaching more of their, you know, best basketball. When we talked about them heading into that game against Indiana, they'd had a couple spotty performances defensively. You know, I'm looking back, obviously, the Nebraska game, you know, they'd not been particularly good. The Illinois game, they'd not been particularly good defensively. You could even rewind to some of the games they won. You know, they weren't great defensively against Alabama. They were obviously, they struggled in the game where they gave up 92 to Northwestern. But if you look at the last six games, beginning with Indiana, only three times has an opponent averaged 1 point per possession in those six games. Northwestern obviously put up a ton of points against them. It seems like Chris Collins just has something up his sleeve against Purdue, but they held Iowa to 1.01 points per possession. They held Wisconsin a tick under 1.05. They aren't turning the ball over anymore, which was something else that they were really struggling with kind of around the turn of the year, kind of a little bit sort of post-Christmas time. They had a run of games where they really struggled to turn the ball over, but they only have one game with a single game turnover rate in their last six, over 16.7%. So, you know, I'm not trying to make them out to be absolutely unbeatable, although at Mackey Arena, I suspect they might wind up being this season. It's more just a way of saying they are playing, I would argue, their best basketball, in particular in terms of kind of the things that maybe we thought might be weaknesses for them a few weeks ago, a month or two ago, are starting to disappear.
Purdue has won seven straight for the third different time this season. The Boilermakers defeating Wisconsin, the sixth-ranked Badgers, last Sunday. That is now seven straight wins against AP top 10 ranked teams, the longest streak ever by a Big Ten team. Well, Purdue, they've had a week off. They played Sunday and now have had 5 days to get ready. And there's some things that we did learn last time. Maybe in defeat, you pull a little bit out of it. But as we talked about yesterday, if Trey Galloway is going to handle the ball a little bit more, that's probably not the best defensive matchup that Purdue can throw out there. That will force them to do something different. And it would be nice to see what happens when Mbako and Ware hopefully do not fall into the foul cauldron again.
The foul issues, I mean, that's the big one. And I think that the big one in particular is Ware. And I said this, I think, when we talked about either yesterday or maybe around the last game at Purdue. One of Trace Jackson Davis's underrated qualities in his matchups with Zach Edey was knowing when to let him go and sort of knowing when to recognize – you know, Edie's gotten too good of a position. He's too close to the basket. You know,
let him dunk it.
I just gotta kind of let it go. You know, and just it's only 2 points. Live to fight, basically. And you know, where in fairness, he's kind of following the instinct you're taught against 99.9% of all opponents you ever face, which is be tough, don't make things easy. But, you know, one of those fouls is him just essentially fouling Edie to try and force him to make free throws rather than get a free bucket. You know, it's got to be a game where not just where, but I think where's the big one, because I don't think Zach Edey is used to people playing in his face. Like I think that where Edie's obviously got the physical strength. He's also older. Like it's simplistic, but you know, we've talked about Khalil Ware adding 30-something pounds between last season and this season. Well, give him another 2 years, and I don't think he's going to be listed at 300 like Edey is, but give him another couple years, and I bet he's up to like 255, 260. There's more upper body strength, et cetera. You know, but Edey's still got the physical sort of advantage on him right now. But I think that Edey sometimes struggled with Ware, at least in the patches we saw when that game was in the balance. Just because suddenly Edey had a guy in his airspace, you know, he wasn't kind of towering over everybody. He had somebody that when he, you know, stretched his arms out, somebody else spread his arms out just as wide. Somebody else unfurled just as tall. And I think that, you know, Mbako is important in a game like this because it's simplistic. But to win a game like this in a place like Mackey, you're going to have to make some unlikely shots. And I think he's one of the guys on this team that can do that, that can – you know, just kind of catch fire for 5 minutes and make three or four threes, that kind of thing. But Ware is the one that, for me, you know, if you're going to have a good plan, not necessarily just for slowing Zach Edey down, but more for sort of removing Zach Edey's influence from Purdue's offense and isolating him a little bit, even if he's getting his points, Khalil Ware's your key. And they've just got to be able to navigate that.
The unobstructed view from the Edey penthouse, you're right. Ware can get into that airspace, and Indiana can't get killed on the glass if they're going to give Purdue, especially offensive rebounds. Who's going to get most of them, you would think? That's why Ware has to find a way to stay on the floor, because if anything, he doesn't have to grab rebounds. He does rebound well, but just putting Edey off and making Edey just work harder, I think it sounds so simplistic, but it's true. If Edey doesn't have somebody in there to bang with, well, he's got an easier night regardless, and that should help him on the offensive end. I heard Matt Painter talking and assessing Indiana earlier, or maybe it was from yesterday, but I watched it today, and he had a good point. He said, you know what, when we make 12 or 14 threes and Edey's kind of doing his thing down in the post, we don't lose very often. Well, he's not wrong, and if you're Indiana, how do you defend this Saturday night? Do you let Edey get the twos because you can fight back easier with twos? Or do you go down there and help and make Purdue, make Braden Smith do something better than 0-for-6, 2-of-14 like you saw in game one?
Yeah, I mean, I personally wouldn't double too much. I mean,
neither would I. You know, I agree 100%.
This is the fifth best 3-point shooting team in America. They have the exact same 3-point shooting percentage in Big Ten play as they have overall, so it's not like that number's gone down recently. You've got Smith can shoot. You know, Jones is a little streaky, but we saw him make some in Bloomington. Fletcher Lawyer can shoot. Miles Colvin can shoot when he's on the floor. Mason Gillis is, you know, I think he's played 7 years of college basketball now, and he's essentially never been a bad three-point shooter, no matter what is, you know, no matter where he is in the volume conversation, he makes threes, whether he gets a bunch of them or he doesn't get many of them at all. That's a, I mean, that is one of just the basic differences between last year and this year for Purdue is Purdue can make threes. They were not a good three-point shooting team last season. You know, they were statistically pretty poor. They were a little bit better, a little bit more kind of middle of the road by the end of the season. But you knew, and Indiana saw this, you know, if you think about that game that Indiana won up in West Lafayette, Purdue shoots 5 of 23 from three that day. Smith, Lawyer, Ethan Morton, Brandon Newman, Mason Gillis, David Jenkins all combined to shoot basically 5 of 21. Caleb First missed a couple as well. But the guys that need to make them were not making them. This team, this Purdue team, 2023, 2024, is making those threes. And so I don't think you can afford to help too much. I think you've got to be able to lean back into the fact that, you know, I forget what the exact number was, but I think it was something like 56 and 36. Edie went for against Indiana across two games last season. You know, that you can, Indiana has at least some learned behavior of beating Purdue when Zach Edey plays well individually. But when you let the Zach Edey factor kind of disrupt the whole plan and you wind up building a defense that orbits around Edey and chases Edey at the expense of leaving other guys open, this Purdue team can hurt you in ways that last year's just didn't nearly as consistently. And I think that is something Indiana has got to really consider, I think.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, joining us here on a big show Friday. Crazy Horse Tavern brings it to you. Glass in the afternoon. And, well, yeah, Lance Jones, the last seven games during Purdue's winning streak, 23 of 52. That's 44% from three. You know Lawyer can make him. You know Smith is the guy that's going to bug you maybe more ways than the shooting. Purdue, though, here's the number. Here's the magic number. 18-0 this season when holding foes to 79 or fewer. Purdue, 3-2 when their opponent reaches 80 or more. How is Indiana's offense going to put Purdue's defense in conflict?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other tricky one. And it's a two-game sample size. And I said this when Indiana played Purdue in Bloomington. The only two teams that have beaten Purdue this year scored with Purdue. Nebraska had 88, Northwestern had 92. If you look at the teams that have, you know, at least kind of made life uncomfortable for Purdue, it has consistently been Alabama scoring 86, Arizona scoring 84. Obviously, Northwestern recently took them to overtime, scored 96 in Mackey. I think Purdue's got too many tools to win a close game, particularly at home if it's low scoring. Yeah, this is going to be, I mean, it sounds, again, simplistic, but this is going to be one where Indiana needs to punch up a little bit offensively. And you know, Indiana's offense has been kind of hit and miss. It was good against Iowa. It was good against Ohio State. It was bad against Penn State. It was good against Minnesota. It was good against Wisconsin. It was bad against Purdue. It's kind of the story of a fairly inconsistent team. You need to find that a little bit. You need, you know, the best of Trey Galloway. You need the best of Malik Renew. You need a good shooting performance. I mean, you know, Indiana's they've got one game of double-digit made threes this season. This would be a heck of a time to make it two, to double that number. Indiana's just got to – I mean, this isn't scientific to say it, but, like, Indiana's got to play a little bit above its station offensively if it's going to win this game, I suspect.
If you're going to get to 80, you're exactly right, because we're not sitting here rattling off all the times Indiana scored 80 this year, right? We haven't had a lot of that sample size. I know you have it right in front of you, but it's not it hasn't been very – have they scored 80 this year?
Indiana?
Yeah.
Yeah. They did at least a couple times. Hold on. I'm back in their schedule now. I mean, they scored 89 against Harvard. Have they scored 80 against a high major opponent? No.
Right.
They scored 79 at Wisconsin, 76 at Ohio State, 78 at Michigan. So, I mean, they've had a couple games where they were close, but no, they have not broken 80 against even Louisville, they only scored 74.
Now, Painter's watching the same games we watch. He knows that he's heard of Anthony Leal before, so that's not going to be some trick up Indiana's sleeve. Leal did not play in the first game because of an injury problem. But they've seen Galloway now here for, well, almost 4 full years. They know what they can get there. Who has to go along with Galloway and renew? Can Ware get can he get 20 against Edie down there in the block? It's got to be Mbako, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's Mbako. I think Mbako's the big one again because Mbako's the one that I think can catch fire from three if he can.
And he's a natural scorer. That's the other thing. He does.
Well, we talked about this in the first game that part of what hurt Indiana, and even Mike Woodson kind of admitted he probably should have handled it differently. It looked like Purdue didn't have a great cover for Mbako, and I know Purdue feared that matchup too. And Mbako, you know, it's worth saying. I mean, hits a couple threes, scores 15 points. Like he actually did wind up in only about 25 minutes being making a decent impact on that game. Of course, it was all a little bit after the Lord Mayor's show in terms of the foul trouble. But Purdue doesn't have a natural matchup for Mbako. If Indiana ever plays smaller at all, then I think that becomes even more real because suddenly you get bigger, slower guys chasing him around. And again, he's also the player, you know, I would say probably the most likely player on this team to just hit 4 threes in one half, you know, and just kind of just boom, 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 boom. He finds his range. He gets going a little bit, and all of a sudden, now I say that he's only hit 4 threes in the game one time this year, but he's the one that is to me most likely, other than a renew or a Trey Galloway, to just kind of find, you know, a 5-7 minute pocket in the game where suddenly nobody can figure out how to play him, and he scores 10 or 12 points, you know, and I think that's. That's going to be the kind of burst Indiana needs in this game offensively if it's going to stay in touch, I think.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, wrapping things up on a Crazy Horse Tavern. Big show Friday. The freedom that Indiana brings into the game on Saturday night, 8 o'clock on Fox. The weight of the world, it probably isn't on their shoulders right now. That's got to help this team, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, possibly. You know, I would be kind of curious to know, like, just what the psychological effect of that second half was against Ohio State, because you watched that first half and you saw Ohio State playing a little desperate, and you know, you couldn't help but sort of join that up to the way Indiana played in the last 20-25 minutes of the Penn State game, and you sort of wondered, man, is this team just kind of disconnecting from itself? And then obviously to come back, not just to win the game, but to come back the way it did. Collective effort, slow, methodical, patient, et cetera. You know, maybe a little bit. I don't think it hurts, you know, to maybe sort of sort out some alpha dog roles a little bit. You know, Trey Galloway, maybe, you know, this kind of needs to be a bit of a corner turned, I think, for him. Not that he's got to score 25 points every game, but that he needs to understand this is the kind of player he can be for this team and the difference it makes when he is, when he's aggressive, when he's attacking, when he's playing confident in his own offensive game. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those where time will tell, I guess, is the best way to put it. And that's obviously a bit of a cop-out. But I really am interested just to see, like, what this game does for Indiana. Or this game being Ohio State, and in particular that second half. Do they maybe feel a little bit freed up? Hey, now nobody expects much of us in terms of the tournament and all this stuff. Certainly nobody expects much of us in terms of competing in this game on Saturday night. I mean, if you look at Purdue's, like, I mean, Purdue's KenPom page, like, this isn't just an Indiana thing, by the way. 96% win expectancy against Indiana, 93 against Minnesota, 80 on the road against Ohio State, 96 against Rutgers, 87 on the road against Michigan, 82 at home to Michigan State. The only game that KenPom thinks Purdue basically has a realistic chance of losing the rest of the way is Illinois.
In Champaign.
And they still have them in the isolated sort of, you know, of that game. Pomeroy still got him as a 2-point favorite. So, like, it's not Indiana's failing that nobody expects anything of them here. Nobody expects anything of anybody going to Mackey for the rest of this year. That's just how good Purdue is. But maybe Indiana can ride a little bit of that and can just say, hey, like, there's nothing to lose here. You know, I mean, we already suffered the biggest loss in 70 years or 80 years or 90 years or whatever it was that is in Bloomington to them earlier in the season. If we just go up there and give them a fight, then we'll have accomplished something, you know, I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it. A little bit, you know, probably not totally dissimilar to, and obviously a very different matchup, but not totally dissimilar to that Illinois game where, you know, Indiana just gets to go into that game and just say, like, let's just fight for 40 minutes and let's see where we are and let's try to make the most out of it.
And you're going to have to score against Purdue. So fight and score, very, very important. Matt Painter also pointed out his club has something else to worry about, winning another Big Ten championship as well. Indiana will not play until Sunday the 18th. That will be their next game. It will be at home against Northwestern. So there's no point in saving anybody or rest. Or you're going to get your rest. You'll have plenty of that. Great job as always, my friend. Thanks for joining us on Thursdays and Fridays. As always, safe trip to West Lafayette for tomorrow night's game, 8 o'clock on Fox. And we will get caught up with you late next week, my man.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me as always, Glass.
That's Zach Osterman, the beat writer for Indiana basketball at the Indy Star and football as well. We'll get to football. They're not going to start anything in football until, what, spring break week? It'll be a while before that. So we'll hear from Kurt Cignetti. Well, Zach's thoughts on coach and the new regime. We'll do that a little bit later as February turns into March. Have a great weekend. Stay tuned. High school hoops tonight. Bloomington North, Terre Haute North. Our coverage begins at 6:55. Tomorrow night, we will be in town with Bloomfield and Bloomington South. Same bat time, same bat channel. And on Sunday, Super Bowl 58. Our coverage begins at 4 o'clock. Chiefs, 49ers, Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. Tune in at 4 o'clock. We'll kick it at 6:30 for the Super Bowl. Kevin Harlan and Kurt Warner, your broadcast team, on Sunday. Have a super Friday night. CBS Sports is next. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour is over.